Hello, this is Jan Kane with the Bloomington Pantograph dated Thursday, April 19th. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Circus Film and Fans Swing into the Trapeze Capital. Gamify Shows, Documentary Viewing Set in Bloomington Normal This Week. The byline is Lenore Sabata. You might say a three-ring circus is coming to Normal this week. In the first ring is Illinois State University's Gamma Phi Circus, the oldest collegiate circus in the nation, with performances scheduled Friday and Saturday in Redbird Arena. In the second ring is the Circus Fans Association of America, holding its national convention Wednesday through Saturday in Normal. The convention is focusing on Bloomington Normal, once being known as the Trapeze Capital of the World. The third ring contains the Flying Trapeze, in this case, a film about trapeze artists called The Flight Fantastic, a story of legend and legacy on the flying trapeze, to be shown for free at 7 p.m. Thursday at the Normal Theater. It will be followed by a question and answer session with two members of the Flying Guyanas, Tito and Richie Guyana, who are featured in the film, and its director, Tom Moore, a successful television, feature film, and Broadway director who directed the original Broadway run of Grease. Moore was just 7 or 8 when he and a cousin earned free tickets to the circus by helping set up the tent and bring water to the elephants. Thus started a lifelong love of the circus arts. Even though Moore said he put his focus into theatrics, he never overcame his fascination with the trapeze and eventually learned to become what an old song describes as the daring young man on the flying trapeze. I was much more daring then than I am now, said Moore, but he still flies when he can, 20 years after he first learned from Richie Goana and others. Moore said the singular focus and concentration required pushes aside other concerns while you are up. While you are up there. Plus, he likes just the thrill of soaring through the air. The documentary was something I felt needed to be done, he said. It's about a spirit, it's about an art, and it's about a family. Moore hopes viewers will come away inspired and embrace the spirit of life. Any good three-ring circus also has midway entertainment. In preparation for the convention, Maureen Brunsdale, head of special collections and rare books at ISU's Milner Library, has set up a display of some of the amazing items from ISU's Circus and Allied Arts collection. There will be an open house from 11 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. on the 6th floor of Milner, to which the public is invited. Sequined costumes hang from the ceiling and are displayed on mannequins, given new life after the closing of JCPenney at Eastland Mall. There are old trunks, photographs, and other artifacts, including a copy of the book Born to Fly, the story of Tito Goana. Moore said the Goanas are one of the most famous flying acts of all time and very charismatic and extraordinarily caring. The library display includes a photo of one of the Goanas with Bloomington Normal's most famous flyer, Antoinette Concella, the first woman to do the triple somersault. It all ties back to Bloomington, said Brunsdale. It spins your head how many times I'm out there talking circus history and say, that ties back to Bloomington. The 1870s to about 1950 were the heyday of Bloomington Normal as a producer of aerialists. There were practice barns on East Emerson Street in Bloomington and Grove Street in Normal, as well as rigging in the YMCA where youngsters could learn to fly. Moore said ISU's circus collection and Brunsdale played a huge part in getting this movie going. He spent several days doing research for the documentary. The collection is remarkable, said Moore. One of the reasons I'm excited to come back is for that purpose, to thank the library. Brunsdale hopes people who come to the library exhibit will start telling their stories and perhaps share what they have in their homes. We know there are more circus artifacts in town, she said. The Circus Week events include at 7 p.m. Thursday today at the Normal Theater, free showing of The Flight Fantastic, a 2015 documentary on the Goana Troupe, a family trapeze act from Mexico, Q&A will follow with Tito and Richie Goanna and the film's director, Tom Moore. 7 p.m. Friday and 1 and 7 p.m. Saturday at Redbird Arena, Gamma Phi Circus. Tickets range from $5 for children under 5 to $15 and $17 for standard adult tickets. Details are at www.gammaphicircus.ilstu.edu. And from 11 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. Saturday at the Milner Library, 6th floor, an open house with a display of sequined costumes, photos, and other circus artifacts from ISU's Circus and Allied Arts Collection. This is free. Our next article is headlined, Bon-Ton Set to Liquidate Stores. Company Promises Orderly Wind Down. The byline is Maria Nagel. Going out of business sales are imminent at the Bergner's in Eastland Mall in Bloomington and Hickory Point Mall in Forsyth. They are among 260 stores in 24 states, including 42 in Illinois, that bankrupt parent company the Bon-Ton Stores is expected to sell in assets to liquidators to pay off its creditors. It's going to be painful for the people who work there. It's going to be painful for the malls trying to fill the space because there's a lot of malls out there and a lot of empty space, said Gary Hunter, an Illinois State University professor who teaches retail management and promotion and consumer behaviors. In terms of Bloomington, we'll be short another department store. The mall is going to be emptier, of course, and may find some new tenants to fill the space and not necessarily a department store. But Hunter does not see the dissolution of Bon-Ton, another sign of the demise of brick-and-mortar retailing, anytime soon, noting that about 90% of merchants remain in store buildings. In addition to Bergner's, Bon-Ton operates department stores under the brand names of Carson's, Elder Beerman, Herberger's, Boston Store, Yonkers, and Bon-Ton. Two liquidation firms are the victors of an auction for the bankrupt company's assets, after the retailer failed to find a bidder willing to continue operating the store chain. The company said it expects to provide more details about going out of business sales following approval of the winning bid by the bankruptcy court. Those details were not available late Wednesday afternoon, but the company said in a statement that it will move forward in a constructive manner to ensure an orderly wind down of operations that minimizes the impact of this development on our associates, customers, vendors, and the communities we serve. Bon-Ton did not respond to Pantograph requests to provide the number of workers it employs at the Eastland and Hickory Point Mall stores. We're seeing a realignment in the retail sector, said Illinois Retail Merchants Association CEO and President Rob Carr. They're heavily mall-based. We're seeing significant changes and traffic in malls. I think those combinations lead to where we are at today. Some malls are going to go away, while others repurpose, Carr added. I don't think you're going to see those big anchor store spaces filled with one big operator, as in the past. You might see them subdivided, said Carr. I think mall owners are going to look at more non-traditional ways of filling those spaces. For example, you could see grocery stores, or multiple medical offices, or facilities filling those spaces. Bergner's, a retail tenant at Eastland since 1973, will be the third anchor store to close at the Bloomington Mall. Macy's and JCPenney closed last year. Kohl's and Sears remain. CBL Properties, which owns the Eastland and Forsyth malls, reiterated Wednesday it was preparing for the store's closures. We do not anticipate that this announcement will have a negative impact on future plans, said CBL spokeswoman Stacy Keating. As mentioned Tuesday, construction is underway on Planet Fitness and H&M in the former JCPenney space at Eastland Mall, and we are evaluating redevelopment plans that include new retail for the Macy's space. Meanwhile, South Dakota is leading the effort to even the playing field between online and brick-and-mortar sellers. In arguments this week before the U.S. Supreme Court, South Dakota Attorney General Marty Jackley said the justices should allow states to collect sales taxes from most online retailers. The court is expected to make a decision by late June. While leveling the sales tax playing field with online merchants is important and vital, It is not going to be the only thing that needs to be done to help support the local business community, said Carr. Local and state governments need to start coordinating and looking at what each other does that piles costs or regulations on businesses. Those all add up. Our next article is headlined, Trump Optimistic About North Korea Summit. President's meeting with Kim could take place by early June. It's from the Associated Press out of Washington, D.C. President Donald Trump said Wednesday that his CIA chief got along really well with Kim Jong-un during a secret meeting in North Korea, holding up the highly unusual talks as a reason to confirm Mike Pompeo as Secretary of State. At a joint news conference with Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe in Florida on Wednesday, Trump said the United States will be doing everything possible to make the upcoming meeting with Kim a worldwide success. The president said he hopes to see the day when the two Koreas can live together in safety, prosperity, and peace. He says Japan is a lot closer to North Korea, but adds, we're working on this together. The president has said his own meeting with Kim could take place by early June. Republican lawmakers also supported the Pompeo visit as the U.S. administration prepared for a historic summit aimed at ending North Korea's nuclear weapons program and pushed for Pompeo's rapid confirmation as top diplomat. But that prospect hung in the balance as Democrats lined up against him and questioned why they weren't briefed on the meeting. Pompeo's trip took place over Easter weekend, just over 2 weeks ago, according to White House officials. He is the most senior U.S. official to meet with a North Korean leader since Secretary of State Madeleine Albright met with Kim's father in Pyongyang in 2000. It's indicative of the seriousness with which the Trump administration is taking this, that they really think they can cut a deal, despite many remaining hurdles, said Abraham Denmark, a former senior defense official for East Asia. He added that it reflected the president's high confidence in Pompeo, but lack of confidence in the State Department he's been picked to lead. Pompeo's promotion to his new post is not assured. As Republicans, including Bob Corker, chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, rallied around Pompeo's nomination, Democrats on the panel came out in opposition. Senator Robert Menendez, top-ranking Democrat on the committee that will have the first vote on confirmation, expressed frustration that the CIA chief had not briefed him on the visit that took place more than a week before Pompeo's public hearing last Thursday. Now, I don't expect diplomacy to be negotiated out in the open, but I do expect for someone who is the nominee to be Secretary of State, when he speaks with committee leadership and is asked specific questions about North Korea, to share some insights about such a visit, Menendez said at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. The committee is expected to vote on the nomination next week. Our next article is headlined, Studies Show Retail Racism is Still Prevalent. It's also from the AP out of Philadelphia. It was a surreal scene that is part of daily life for many Black Americans and minorities, an everyday moment gone wrong, ending in complete humiliation. Two Black men were handcuffed and arrested at a Starbucks, setting off a national uproar after the incident was captured on video. A worker complained the men were trespassing, but they maintained they were doing what thousands of people do in the popular coffee shops across the country, waiting to meet a friend. The exchange was a fresh reminder that 5 decades after the end of legal segregation, to be Black in America is to be constantly challenged in certain spaces in ways white Americans scarcely have to consider, simply to get through the day without being hassled. The term used to describe encounters like the one at the Starbucks, is retail racism, also known as shopping while Black. It happens when minority customers are treated differently than white customers through a variety of indignities and slights, such as being refused service, falsely accused of shoplifting, or reported to security or police over something mundane. It is about a perception that Black people are undesirable in a given location, said Princeton University African American Studies professor Imani Perry. Having to perform being non-threatening, it's exhausting, and it is a commonplace expectation. Starbucks announced Tuesday that it would close its 8,000 U.S. stores for several hours next month to conduct racial bias training for its nearly 175,000 workers. The company, known as an inclusive and progressive workplace, has been responsive in the wake of the April 12th incident, and CEO Kevin Johnson came to Philadelphia and met with the two men who were arrested. Within hours, Philadelphia Mayor Jim Kenney condemned the incident, saying it appears to exemplify what racial discrimination looks like in 2018, and prosecutors declined to bring charges against the men. Our next article is headlined, Rankin Beard to Lead Local Dems GOP. The byline is Derek Bay. Two experienced and well-connected local politicians will take the reins of McLean County's two dominant political parties. Eric Rankin, an Illinois State University political science professor and McLean County board member, and Connie Beard, a realtor who has served as party vice chair, will lead the local Democratic and Republican parties, respectively. Both were elected party chair Wednesday by precinct committeemen and will serve for at least 2 years. Both positions opened after the previous party chairs, John Penn and Chuck Erickson, respectively, decided not to seek re-election. Rankin emerged from a three-way race with party co-chair Dorothy Deeney and Patrick Cortese, co-founder of progressive group Indivisible McLean County. Beard was the only candidate to succeed Erickson. Rankin said in February he decided not to run for a fourth county board term, specifically to pursue the party chairmanship. He holds a master's degree in political management from George Washington University in Washington, D.C. We're seeing a paradigm shift, moving from elections being coronations and giving people a choice, he said. What better person to help Democrats get elected to public office than someone that has done so for three terms? Noting much attention has been focused on national and state candidates, Beard told the Pantograph in January she would like the county Republican Party to have more impact on municipal and local government. Beard said her goals as the party's county chair would be to support and grow our base, develop more leadership at the precinct level, find more people to serve as volunteers in the Republican Party, and do a better job of sharing Republican principles with the community at large. Democrats also chose Deeney as vice chair, Kay Moss as secretary, and Matt Wachinski as treasurer. Republicans chose Norma Brown, Andrew Kubik, and Lindsay Bloomfield, respectively, for the corresponding positions. Steve Seuss was elected chair of the McLean County Libertarian Party on Wednesday. Seuss is director of Convergent Radio Broadcasting at Illinois State University and a McLean County Board candidate. Next, we have a story headlined, Locals Say Bush Humble and Kind. Activists, politicians, and experts note the impact of the former First Lady. The byline is Roger Miller and Lenore Sabota. Judy Buchanan said she spent just one day touring McLean County with Barbara Bush during the 1988 presidential campaign, but it felt like she was visiting with an old friend. I have such wonderful, fond memories, said Buchanan. It felt like someone I knew my whole life. She genuinely cared about her family. She was so humble and grateful for the work everyone was doing on the campaign. And a few days later, I received a handwritten thank you note, she said. The former First Lady died Tuesday night, leaving Republican activists like Buchanan, Central Illinois' Republican congressman, and political scientists thinking about her role that Illinois State University Professor Emeritus George Gordon referred to as America's grandmother. Lane Crothers, ISU professor of politics and government, said, I think most people always saw her as a straight-talking, sincere woman. However, Kyle Ciani, ISU associate professor of history, said Bush also embraced being the quintessential homemaker, and that resonated well with a lot of folks. Like Buchanan, Joanne Maitland saw Bush through the eyes of a politician's wife who is a political activist in her own right. Maitland, a former ISU trustee, leader in many civic organizations, and the wife of former State Senator John Maitland, Republican of Bloomington, admired Bush for being simple, plain-spoken, and authentic. She told a story with a laugh about how Bush once remarked that she always wore her trademark pearls to cover the wrinkles on her neck, and they never were real pearls. She was such a very gracious, common person. She was Barbara Bush, and I admire her for that, she said. U.S. Representative Darren LaHood of Dunlap said Bush exemplified both love of country and love of family. She leaves behind a legacy of accomplishment that will continue to make her a role model for years to come. Our nation mourns the loss of a patriot, strong leader, and incredible First Lady, said U.S. Representative Rodney Davis of Taylorville. U.S. Representative Adam Kinzinger of Chanahan said, with her charitable heart, genuine kindness, and her fun-loving nature, Barbara Bush won the hearts of millions, and it's no surprise she is so universally loved. Buchanan, whose husband Rich served as Bloomington mayor and on the city council and McLean County board, has been active in GOP politics since the 1970s and has served on the McLean County Board of Health and the Connect Transit Board. She played leading local roles in George H.W. Bush's successful 1988 presidential campaign, focusing much of her work on rallying rural voters in central Illinois. One of the highlights of all that time, she said, was introducing the future president at McLean County's 1988 Lincoln Day dinner. It was such a great honor, she said. I admired him so much. I admired them both. Crothers said people saw Bush as refreshing. Within the confines of political limits and political reality, she presented herself as the person she was, rather than an empty vessel someone poured their politics into, said Crothers. Gordon, who also is a Democratic member of the McLean County Board, said the role of First Lady has grown in the public eye in the age of electronic media, but each one's stature has varied depending on her and her husband's personalities. Barbara Bush had an impact, he said, noting she had a higher post-White House profile than many First Ladies. She had a distinctive style, and she always demonstrated a lot of class. He said she was very gracious, but she was known for blunt comments, too, and that made her interesting to the public. She was as down-to-earth as a political figure as we've seen, he said, adding, people are impressed by that lack of pretense. He said it's not clear whether she had an impact on the outcome of her husband's 1988 campaign, but having her along for the ride certainly didn't hurt. She was memorable. Siani said that in addition to devoting her life to being a mother and grandmother, Bush also was an activist for society, working on behalf of issues such as literacy and engaging in tremendous philanthropy in Texas and beyond. Next, we have an article entitled, Ambiguous Rules, Focus of Shock Appeal. This is from Chicago. A lawyer for former U.S. Representative Aaron Schock told a federal appeals court in Chicago Wednesday that federal prosecutors are aiming to become the first, with the court's help, to imprison a former member of Congress based on ambiguous rules the U.S. House set for itself. Schock's lawyer argued the point during a 45-minute hearing before a three-judge panel of the 7th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, which is mulling Schock's request to have all 22 charges left in his corruption case tossed before it ever gets to trial. A key question facing the court is whether prosecution of the 36-year-old Peoria Republican for allegedly misusing government and campaign funds violates separation of powers and other clauses in the U.S. Constitution. Defense lawyer Benjamin Hatch said the U.S. Attorney Office in Central Illinois would have this court be the first in the nation to hold that a member of Congress can be sent to prison based on ambiguous or debatable interpretation of House rules. Once seen as a rising star in the GOP, Schock gained notoriety for redecorating his Capitol Hill office in the style of the Downton Abbey TV series. He resigned in 2015 as scrutiny of his spending intensified. Several courts have agreed the Constitution bars prosecutors, as members of the executive branch, from charging legislative branch members based on unclear congressional rules. They can be charged based on clear rules that require no interpretation, courts have also found. Schock's lawyers have argued that all the charges derive, directly or indirectly, from imprecise rules. They singled out one that relied on alleged fraudulent reimbursement for a $5,000 office chandelier. The rule prohibits reimbursements for decorations and furniture, the appeal said, but doesn't define either word. Prosecutors said half of the charges Schock faces have nothing to do with House rules, including one alleging he falsified tax returns. A Department of Justice lawyer, William Glazer, said at Wednesday's hearing that the defense was mischaracterizing the government's approach, as if we want to go around prosecuting people based on ambiguous rules. Glazer said prosecutors won't rely heavily on House rules in trying to prove their case at a trial for Schock. In some instances, he said, showing Schock violated rules would simply be a way to try and show criminal intent. We would prefer to have this case about his underlying conduct and not primarily about particular ambiguities in rules, he said. Next, we have an article with a byline by Kevin Barlow. The title is Logan County Wind Farm Begins Construction. Construction on a $325 million wind farm in Logan County is now underway, and it could be in service by the end of the year. The 71-turbine Hilltopper Wind Project, which will use turbines made by Trinity Structural Towers in Clinton, is expected to create about 300 temporary construction jobs and 8 to 10 permanent local jobs upon completion. Officials say the project also will yield about $1.9 million a year in local taxes and donations to civic groups. The wind farm is under development by Swift Current Energy, which has partnered with Andover, Massachusetts-based NL Green Power, who will manage the construction and be the Hilltopper Project's long-term owner and operator. In January 2017, Swift, a firm based near Portland, Maine, purchased the project from Relight, a company based in Italy. The wind farm, which previously was expected to have 82 turbines, is on 7,500 acres south and west of Mount Pulaski, with tower sites extending to Elkhart and Broadwell. We look forward to continuing to collaborate with local stakeholders throughout the life of the Hilltopper Wind Project, said Rafael Gonzalez, head of Enel. We value our partnership with Mount Pulaski and the broader Logan County community and are committed to contributing to the area's community and economic development, as Swift Current Energy did before us. Swift officials said they will remain active during the construction phase. This is the first of many projects to reach start of construction for us, said Swift co-founder Eric Lammers. This is an exciting milestone for our company, and we look forward to working and making a major investment in Logan County. NL officials estimate the wind farm will provide about $1.5 million in annual tax revenue to the region over the next three decades. The company has also pledged to donate more than $400,000 annually to local organizations and charities through a community benefit fund. We are very excited that the wind farm has started construction and will begin operating by the end of the year, said Logan County Board Chairman Chuck Rubin. Both NL Green Power and Swift Current Energy have been great partners with Logan County, and we look forward to working with them. Swift and NL plan to hold quarterly meetings to update residents on the status of the wind farm. Residents will be able to ask questions of company officials during those meetings. The wind farm is expected to generate around 570 gigawatt hours and power purchase deals that have already been signed with Bloomberg LP and General Motors. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Bloomington Pantograph dated Thursday, April 19th. Please stay tuned.